Hello, everyone, and welcome to this quick edition of the Sheila Zielinski Show. I'm just doing a quick half-hour show today, but boy, this we're going to cover a lot. Now, somebody had a little debate with me on carbon taxes, and I find, boy, is there a lot of confusion. What is a carbon tax, and who cares about it? Well, that's all we hear with the Canadian government, and they're pushing it in the U.S. too on carbon taxes. Now, I am just shocked at the level of buffoonery when it comes to just the topic carbon taxes. Well, it is one of my favorite men. It is my good friend, a very dear person to me. He is one of the smartest men I know. He's a renowned climatologist. His highly acclaimed books are amazing. His research is impeccable. It is my good friend who wrote the foreword for Green Gospel, my book. It is such a pleasure to have him on. He's been a long time friend of mine. Dr. Tim Ball, welcome to the program, sir. Weigh in on these incredible student climate protests across United States and Canada. Of course, we see them in Europe too, but they're even right in my own backyard here in BC, Canada. And it is stunning the level of ignorance with even with our youth, what's happening when it comes to this term climate change. So weigh in on that and then give us the what we need to know about carbon taxes.
Well, of course, this is they're down now to using the children because they're losing the argument on the science of it. But your proposal for the program today is very, very important because, as Voltaire said, if you're going to debate with me, sir, first define your terms.
Yeah.
And everybody uses terms. They use them incorrectly. They don't know what they're talking about, which is indicated by their use of the term. And so just by establishing what each term means and what's actually going on, you can clarify an awful lot of the deception that's occurring. So, carbon tax. Well, first of all, it's not a carbon tax. It's a carbon dioxide tax. And that's a perfect example of the misuse of terms. Carbon is a solid. They use it because the people equate it with soot and coal. And of course, that then makes it dirty. In fact, carbon dioxide is a gas. It's not a solid like carbon. And carbon dioxide is one of the most important, although a very small fraction of the atmosphere. It's about 0.04% of the total atmosphere. It's an important gas because it's what plants need to survive. It's as important to the plants as oxygen is to us as humans. And so that's the first thing. The second thing that the confusion that you get is that you get climate scientists. They're people who are expert in one thing, like they're physicists, for example. But because they try to apply physics to climatology, they then call themselves a climate scientist. The only people that are knowledgeable about climate and climate change are climatologists.
Right on.
That's the people that study. Now, the difference between a climatologist and a meteorologist is a meteorologist studies physics of the atmosphere, the physics of how the atmosphere works. So that's a huge difference. The second part of this is that weather and climate. Weather is when you stand outside, it's what you experience at any given moment. And it's the sum total of everything from cosmic radiation in deep space to heat coming from the center of the Earth and everything in between. That's the weather. And it's a momentary thing. The climate is the average of that weather. So if you measure the weather every hour, average out that weather over a 24-hour period, that's the climate of the day. And so climate is the average of the weather at a location, so say the climate of Kelowna, or the climate change over time. So how the climate of Kelowna changes over time. That's the proper terminology. But all of this has become confused because people chose or took climate and climate change for a political agenda. And therefore, everything was confused and confusion was deliberately created so that they could tell you one thing and actually mean something completely different. So those are some of the important definitions that you need to know and need to understand. But the one with regard to this particular thing is when they talk about carbon tax, they're talking about carbon dioxide tax. And that is an estimate by governments of what percentage of tax impacts individual humans are putting out, individual businesses are putting out, individual industries are putting out, and then they estimate that they believe that that carbon dioxide or CO2 is causing global warming, and that's potentially harmful to the Earth, and therefore you've got to pay for the damage that you're doing to the planet, and they then assess a carbon tax. And so that's how it all came about.
Okay, well, I want to read you something that I think is really, this really tells the tale on it. I want to read to you, Tim, and I think you'll find this incredibly interesting. I want to read the Wikipedia definition of how they explain this. And I think this is kind of frightening. A carbon tax is a tax levied on the carbon content of fuels. It is a form of carbon pricing. Carbon is present in every hydrocarbon fuel, coal, petroleum, natural gas, and converted to carbon dioxide. In contrast, non-combustion energy sources, wind, solar, geothermal, hydropower, and nuclear, do not convert hydrocarbons to CO2. CO2 is a, get this, heat-trapping greenhouse gas, which represents a negative externality on the climate system. Then it says, see, scientific opinion on global warming.
Well, of course, that's the definition that they want. And so if you're going to have a debate with somebody, you define the terms and have your debate about it. But somebody else can come along with a completely different definition, and the debate is completely different. What they're doing is in that definition is they're defining CO2 as a harmful or dangerous gas. And that is completely false. I mean, it's like saying that, okay, we're going to define oxygen as a dangerous gas because oxygen causes rust. It causes metal to degrade. And therefore, we're going to define oxygen as a harmful gas in the atmosphere and reduce the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere. It's absolutely crazy. And by the way, the current level, which is also a false number created by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, they claim that the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is 400 parts per million. And that is the total amount that comes from all natural sources like oceans and forests and so on, and also the portion that comes from humans burning fossil fuels. At 400 parts per million, it's only about one-third of the amount that plants actually need to be most efficient. Plants need anywhere up to 1,200 parts per million to yield the maximum yields they're capable of doing and to be most efficient. And we know that from research done in labs where you take a plant and surround it and then increase the amount of CO2 that's available to it, and the plant will increase its yield by a factor of four, reduce its water use by a factor of four. And also, when you look at the record, the level of CO2 in the atmosphere over the last 250 million years has been 1,200 parts per million. In other words, four times higher than it is today. And during that 250 million years, plants evolved. Therefore, they evolved to an optimum level for them of 1,200 parts per million. So it's like with a human that you're not getting enough oxygen. You're getting a third of the oxygen that you require. Well, you can take oxygen and increase your performance. And you watch this as what athletes do. When they want to increase the potential and capability of their bodies and their output, they just suck on oxygen. Well, that's exactly the same thing that plants is occurring with plants. They're malnourished at 400 parts per million. So Al Gore's argument that we should reduce the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, and they want to take it down to, I think, what was the organization that Bill McGibbon created called 350.org. That's saying 350 parts per million is the ideal level of CO2 in the atmosphere. Well, that's getting close to the level at which plants begin to die. At 150 parts per million, all the plants on the planet are dead. And so what they're arguing...
And then that means humans are dead.
Oh, yeah, well, because if there's no plants, there's no oxygen. The oxygen, the plants create the oxygen. So if you get rid of the plants, you get that eliminates oxygen, and then all life on Earth is dead. But you see, that's what I find amusing, because a lot of these people that promoting all of this stuff are anti-human. They believe that humans are a plague on the planet, that they shouldn't be here. And so you can see this in so many different ways, that they believe that if you got rid of all the people on the planet, the Earth would be a much better place to live.
They say, yeah, this is their line, the objective of a carbon tax is to reduce the harmful and unfavorable levels of carbon dioxide emissions. Carbon taxes offer a cost-effective means of, here we go, ready for it, reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Explain this.
Well, of course, you see, what they're arguing is that humans, by burning fossil fuels, are putting more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And they start with the assumption that if the CO2 in the atmosphere increases, the global temperature would increase. And that's based on the argument that sunlight comes into the Earth's atmosphere, passes through the atmosphere, hits the Earth, warms up the Earth, and that heat then heats the atmosphere. And one of the things that's very critical that people don't understand or know is the atmosphere is not heated by the sun. The atmosphere is heated by the Earth. And proof of that is that if you, I don't care where you are on the Earth or what time of day or anything else, if you get in an airplane and you fly up to 40, 50,000 feet, you will find yourself at minus 40, minus 50, minus 60. But aren't you closer to the sun? You should be warmer up there. But in fact, you're colder. And the reason for that is because you've moved away from the source of heat in the atmosphere, which is the Earth. What happens is that sunlight comes in, passes through the atmosphere, it hits dust, and it does warm up the atmosphere a little bit with the dust and particles in it, but it strikes the ground, that heats the ground. The ground then gives off that heat in a different wavelength. And because it's now in a different wavelength, the gases in the atmosphere, such as water vapor, carbon dioxide, and methane, those gases block or delay the escape of that heat to space. And therefore, that's why they're called greenhouse gases. So it's like the argument that the Earth's atmosphere works like a greenhouse. In fact, it doesn't. A greenhouse works by allowing sunlight to pass through the glass, heat the Earth's surface inside the greenhouse, and then that heat can't get out past the glass, and therefore the greenhouse becomes hot. That's the analogy. That's why they use the greenhouse analogy. The Earth's atmosphere doesn't work like that at all. What heats the atmosphere in the Earth, it heats the layer of air close to the ground, in touch with the ground by contact. That's called conduction. So that's like when you put a kettle or a pot on a stove, the heat from the stove touches the bottom of the pot, that heats the metal, and the water in contact with that metal heats up, and then that rises by convection, I should say, rises up, and the heat circulates, the water circulates in the pot until eventually all the water is heated. Well, it's that heating of contact of the atmosphere with the ground that causes the air to rise, and that is what circulates around and heats the atmosphere. The greenhouse doesn't work like that at all. So those vertical currents of wind and the horizontal currents of wind transport that heat energy away from the surface that then raises the temperature of the Earth. So the analogy of the greenhouse is completely wrong. The argument of carbon dioxide slowing down the rate at which the heat can escape, but it's only 4% of those so-called greenhouse gases. Water vapor is 95% of the effect. So when that heat leaves the surface of the Earth, what blocks most of it in the atmosphere is the water vapor. And that's why if you get, say, in a fall during the day, the ground is heated by the sun, that heat then rises up and it's trying to escape to space. If there is cloud cover, then that traps more of the heat, and therefore the temperature stays high during nighttime. But if there's no cloud cover, the heat escapes to space and the temperature drops and you get frost. That's water vapor acting as a greenhouse gas. And that's why you see in the desert, for example, the range of temperature in a desert, because there's virtually no water vapor there, is very hot during the day and very cold at night. And you see that in places like Kelowna, the range of temperature that can occur from day to night. That's water vapor acting as greenhouse gas. The CO2 in the atmosphere has virtually no effect on that at all. And therefore, CO2 is only a fraction of the so-called greenhouse gases. But because they want to blame humans for causing the runaway global warming and destruction of the planet. That's why they've created this misinformation and misuse of that information. But they build that into their computer models. So in their computer models, they say if we increase the CO2, the temperature increases. Well, of course it does, because you programmed your computer model to do that. Mm. But that's the only place in the world where that happens. In nature, if you increase the CO2 in the atmosphere, it doesn't do anything to the temperature at all. So this is all what they've created, a lie created in a computer model. And then when you say to them, well, how do you know that CO2 causes temperature increase? Well, our computer models did it does. We raise the CO2 in the computer model and the temperature increases, and that therefore that proves it. Well, this is unbelievable, but this is what they're doing.
It's incredible. For example, yesterday, this is the post at Breitbart, Al Gore, over 99.9% of scientists agree with me on climate change. Listen, 99.9% of scientists don't even agree that Al Gore is human. Come on. Appearing on CNN, trustworthy CNN's newsroom Friday, former Vice President Al Gore claimed that 99%, well, let's listen to this from him talk about this. Here we go.
Despite all the science, all the warnings, there are still skeptics at the highest level of government. To what do you attribute that?
Well, I don't think that there are, obviously there's no basis for doubting what the Mother Nature is telling us now. It's beyond the consensus of 99% of the scientists. Just listen to Mother Nature, and the climate-related extreme weather events have quadrupled in recent years. Here in the U.S. alone, in less than 9 years, we've had 17 once-in-a-thousand-year events, and they keep on coming, and they keep on getting worse. So the old strategy of trying to fool people into disbelieving the evidence in front of their own eyes is failing, and we're crossing a tipping point now, Brooke. We're seeing many Republicans change their positions and join the growing bipartisan consensus. And the debate's not about the science. That debate's long since over. The debate now is about the best ways to move as fast as we can to solve this crisis.
But what about the leader of all Republicans, the president himself? I mean, if inaction continues for the next 2, maybe 6 years under a Trump White House, what concerns you? What is the one immediate consequence on climate?
Well, actually, in what some might call a perverse way, I think the fact that Donald J. Trump has become the global face of climate denial is actually encouraging a lot more people to join the cause of helping bring about the solutions more rapidly. He cannot withdraw from the Paris Agreement, by the way, legally. So the fate of this issue is not in his hands. It's in our hands, and a large and growing bipartisan majority in this country is now saying definitively to politicians and office holders, it's time to act.
It's time to act, Tim.
Every single thing he said in those statements is false. Every single one.
Yep.
First of all, CO2, as I said, it's not carbon. The levels, it's not related to temperature change whatsoever. There's no place in the record that shows that. And the weather events, increase in weather events, even the IPCC in their most recent reports say that the weather events have not increased. In fact, they've decreased. He's absolutely telling lies about that. Straight out lies. The number of storms, the severity of the storms has not increased. There have been virtually no tornadoes for one of the longest periods in the record. And yet he doesn't mention anything about that at all. The Paris Agreement, yes, the president can pull out of it. And the reason is because it's an agreement, not a treaty. If it was a treaty like Kyoto, then the Senate would have a vote on it. And Obama knew if it was a treaty, the Paris was a treaty, the Senate would vote no, not to agree to the treaty, just like they did with Kyoto. And so it was called an agreement, and therefore the president can pull out at any time that he chooses. And Trump chose to pull out of it. But the final issue is 99.9% of scientists. Well, first of all, consensus has nothing to do with science. absolutely nothing. Like Einstein said, I can have 100 experiments prove I'm correct. You have one experiment prove I'm wrong, and it's all over. So his argument about the consensus. The truth is that probably 99% of scientists would agree that climate changes. Nobody's ever said it doesn't. This is where he's confusing people deliberately. What we're talking about is the claim that humans are causing climate change. And there, only about 3% of scientists agree that humans are causing climate change. The 99% figure that say 99% of scientists agree that climate changes, yes. That's like 99% of people say that women have babies. Tell me something I don't know. But yeah. This is done deliberately. It's done to confuse people between natural climate change and whether humans have any part of that climate change. And that's the real issue. 99% of scientists do not agree that humans are causing climate change. And then, of course, his final comment about the science is settled, the debate is over. There never was a debate. There never was a debate, because what happened was they put up the hypothesis that if humans add CO2 to the atmosphere, the temperature would increase. That's a scientific hypothesis. But what happens in science is that the minute you create a hypothesis, other scientists, acting in their proper role as skeptics, challenge that hypothesis. Well, they blocked any attempt to challenge the IPCC CO2 from humans is causing global warming hypothesis. It was never challenged. There was never a debate. And the simple solution to that, by the way, is to say to Al Gore, okay, Al, if you say the science is settled, the debate is over, then stop all funding to climate research. Why do you need any more funding if the science is settled? So his argument that the debate is over is absolutely false. Because of people like him, the debate was never allowed to go on. That people like me that dared to speak out got threatened with lawsuits, being ridiculed, and as he's doing in that interview, being made to look like you're stupid and don't know what you're talking about, and that you're an outlier if you dare to even question this. Every single comment and statement he made in that particular just little clip is completely false and proves that he knows absolutely nothing about what he's talking about.
This is interesting because, as you know, Trump is considering prominent climate denier William Happer to lead up the White House effort to cast doubt, they say, and even the way they word these articles. But this is what he actually says. He said, oh, here's the caption. He denies rising CO2 levels are a problem. Even in climate denial circles, the argument that more carbon dioxide will be a net positive for the world, like he's actually saying, listen, CO2 is beneficial for the earth, period, plain and simple. There's nothing else to say about it. He said this demonization of carbon dioxide is unbelievable. And it is a demonization, isn't it? It's the deadly pollutant.
Well, first of all, a disclaimer. I've known Will Happer for 30 years now. He's, by the way, is one of the top physicists in the world. Yep. He's a professor emeritus at Princeton, and he was chosen by Trump to head up this climate red team to do the proper science. In other words, to do what I talked about just now, that is to look at the other side. So what he's arguing, and you've heard me talk, I will say to the audience, look, I'm going to give you a biased presentation because all you've heard up to now is a bias. I'm going to give you the other bias that you don't hear. You then go home and make up your own mind. And that is what's happening here, that Happer is going to chair the team that is going to look at what is not presented to the public, deliberately kept from the public, and distorted when it's presented to the public. And you just heard Al Gore do a example of that. And then he's going to say, okay, here's what you haven't been told. Now what do you think about it? And of course, this is exactly what should have happened. Happer is very, very well qualified, and they couldn't have picked a better person. And of course, he will select people. Now, they, as you said, Happer's being attacked, not because of his capabilities or his knowledge, but it's a personal attack. They won't attack him on the science because they know they're going to lose every single time. And that is the same thing with me. Oh, he's paid by the oil companies. He's this, he's that. Well, why don't you answer my questions about the science? And the answer is because you can't and you don't want to, because if you answer the questions properly, you're going to have to show that what I'm saying to the people is correct. So the idea is to keep the debate off of the table. One way you do that is by saying there's no point having the debate. It's over.
Incredible, Tim. Well, this clears up a lot of this for people. And, you know, I'm excited about what Trump's doing. You know, Al Gore made it sound like everybody is, oh, there's just this massive growing body. No, there's a massive growing body of people that think he's full of crap is what there is.
Okay, look here, just very quickly at the end, to give you hope and to give you a pattern, the public, for the most part, don't understand the debate, the science, and so on. But they know there's something wrong. There's a growing, and as you see it in the distrust of politicians and the political vehicles and the use of everything for a political agenda, and all of the polls are showing that the public are sitting on the sideline keeping their mouth shut. And one just last week showed that about 80% of Americans are neutral on the climate issue. Now, the reason they're neutral is, as I said, because they think there's something wrong, but they can't explain it, so they keep their mouth shut. So they're doing Twain said, if you sit with your mouth shut, majority of people will assume you're stupid. Don't open your mouth and prove it. And so what they're doing is they're sitting there. A 10 million people poll of 8 different countries listed 16 concerns of the public. Climate change was dead last. And so what's happening is the public know that there's something wrong, that they've been lied to, but they don't know enough to put their finger on it. So they're just sitting quietly by. And then, of course, now with Trump saying, okay, here's what you haven't been told. What Trump is doing as a proper leader would do is saying, look, here's all the information. Now you make up your mind. So that's what will happen. So the public are ready to hear what Will Happer and his group have to say, and then hopefully some sanity will be brought to all of this.
Oh, wow. Sanity. That's a new concept, Tim. Yeah, listen, Tim, in the waning part here of this show, very quickly give out your information, how folks can check out your handiwork and also get your amazing book as well.
Yeah. My website is drtimball.ca. That's drtimball.ca. And my book is advertised on that. And it's the biggest deception in history. And that, of course, is the human cause of global warming. And what it is, it's a simple read, not to insult people's intelligence, but just to put it in language they can understand. Because one of the great deceptions of today's world across the spectrum is that every group has their own terminology and their own language, and they can talk to each other, and the public don't understand. And that's what you do with the law. And you take any course at university, the very first thing in first year is you learn the language of that discipline, which then gives you power and authority over that information. And so the book is 104 pages. It does investigative journalism, who, what, where, when, why, and how, about how they've created this great deception.
Yes, and it is absolutely wonderful. And I just really appreciate your time and coming on the program, Tim. It's always a pleasure to have a little sanity on this issue. Thank you, sir, for your time.
Well, you're welcome. And by the way, notice that there's not a single university in the world that offers even a half credit in common sense.
Common sense is not so common, Tim.
Exactly. Anyway, Sheila, look, thanks again for the opportunity. Prayers for you and your family. I'm so grateful to have you as a friend. We really are.
Oh, likewise, my friend. Likewise. I'm really, really glad you took the time. And I thank you for what you do. You're a very courageous man who's really been trying to expose this new world order for decades. Thank you for what you do, Tim.
And I couldn't do it without the support of you and all the other radio and blog sites around the world. And I'm so grateful for that. I don't want people to necessarily to believe. We presented the other side. Now you've got both sides of the argument. Now you can exercise your free will and make up your own mind.
Well said, well said. Folks, don't take our word for it. Go do the research for yourself. And one of the ways you can really do some good research is get Dr. Tim's book. The information is linked there in the bio below. And again, that's drtimball.com, drtimball.com. Reach out to Tim and let him know you heard him on the program. And we have more fantastic programs coming all this week. Thank you so much for tuning into the program today, folks. And do not forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel and follow me on the podcast. All that information is over there at SheilaZelinsky.com. We'll see you real soon. Good night and God bless.